Entrepreneur Podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany. I'm bringing you today another interview in our series with investors. This time, I have the pleasure to welcome the Business Angel of the Year 2020, Nicholas D. Bayer. Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Joe. Hi, everyone. I'm fine, thanks.
We may tell our audience before that there are many awards for business angels, but yours is from the German Business Angel Association, called BAND, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's correct. And the specialty here is that it's not a jury granting this award. Well, in the end, yes, but in order to be nominated, you have to be nominated by one of your startups.
Oh, so it's actually an investor's award where the startups have to recommend the investor.
Yeah, exactly. So that's some kind of gate that not everyone may get this award, and which is something which makes me exceptionally proud because my startups have nominated me.
That is really cool. But before we get into your business angel investment, investing and investing philosophy, let us first talk a little bit about what you did before. I've seen you had several stops along your professional path. Can you take us like a little bit on the journey to the stage? What led you to starting up your own company? Because my understanding is you started a company, you sold it to IBM, and from those proceedings, you became a professional investor. But first, let us take it step by step, okay?
Yeah. So basically, I studied computer science in Aachen. And then because of my diploma thesis, I went to Frankfurt and into the banking industry. And I was focusing on payments in general and on fraud in payments. And one day, that was in 2006, 2007, there opened the chance to open or to found my own company together with a partner, which we did. And the business was about preventing fraud in credit card transactions or online banking and so on. Although I said that I studied computer science, I've never worked as a typical programmer or software developer. I was always at the customer facing side, so selling a product, marketing a product, project or product management. And so this was almost happening as it should have, that I said, okay, now let's build the own business, which we did. And then this went quite well. And then in 2015, there was like a strategic discussion internally. Do we grow further on our own because we were addressing a global market, or do we need external funding to accelerate growth even more? And then almost out of the blue, there suddenly was IBM, which was interested in acquiring the business, which they then eventually did. And I myself thought, well, I've just gone 40 years and I'm still rather young. I can start doing other things, so I don't need to stay in the business. Which happily I could, because all the other key persons in the company stayed with IBM. So I was allowed to leave the company. And then it happened. Some months later, I converted myself into an angel investor.
I would be at first, because this is a podcast where I guess like 90% more or less of the audience touches entrepreneurship. Can you tell us a little bit about what your company was all about? Because my understanding is that fraud prevention in credit card payments is still desperately needed, and there is still today a small level, but still fraud going on.
So, I mean, a very basic example is you have You have a credit card, and there's one payment at a gas station at 9 a.m. in Frankfurt. And 3 hours later, there's an ATM withdrawal in New York with the same card. And we as human beings, we know that this is not possible because you cannot travel as fast. However, from a technical perspective, I mean, the card was valid, the PIN has been entered correctly, there's enough money on the account. So from a technical perspective, both transactions are completely valid. And normally, the second transaction, the withdrawal in New York, would be granted or authorized, as is the technical term for that. And so we in our business, we had a real-time transaction analysis engine, which was looking for such special kinds of behavior. In fact, what we've been doing is one of the first commercially successful applications of artificial intelligence.
That artificial intelligence and fintech is always very interesting. I can see why IBM got interested in this. Sorry, but I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. So, yeah, I mean, this simple example is explaining very lucidly how it works. You have technically everything is correct and looks fine, but still we as human beings immediately know this is not possible.
I was
sitting there in the payments stream and looking for kind of abnormal behavior or deviations from normal standard behavior. And of course it gets much more complex than just this single easy example.
I see. And then you decided, okay, now I have sold a company, I made some money. And was it already when you decided to kind of go your own way after selling the company, was it already that you set your heart on becoming a business angel, or did your first investment happen by accident?
Yeah, it didn't really happen by accident. It was a reasonable decision in itself, but it happened by chance, let's say. Actually, I was on a wedding of a friend of mine, and I literally got drunk with someone else. We were standing at the bar and having a good chat, and a few weeks later he told me of this company, which was very interesting and looking for funding, and he really got me excited. So this was then my first investment, which is Democrans from Dubai. They do micro insurance for the third world, so for like low sum insurances, which are in a third world country a big deal, but not like here in Germany, where the premium would be so low that no insurance is interested in that. So I invested in this company, and but then at the same time I thought, oh look, this is high risk business, and if you just do one investment, you can almost be sure that you will lose your money. So I need to invest into more startups and take it serious. This is not spending money for fun. This is serious business. I want to have a return on investment. So I need to spread my risk. And this is how it started. Then I started to look at generating my own deal flow and so on.
So there.
Now it's at the moment it's 11 startups, and I'm looking to grow further, because I know in the end 8 out of 10 startups unfortunately will not make it.
But with 11 startups, you do have the opportunity, 11 current investments, to really have a valid business in your portfolio. And I really think that it's a very good idea to diversify your risk also as a business angel. I was just smiling because it appears that in the last few weeks, a lot of the interesting startup stories start on a bar or with a bottle of wine. So you're along that lane. I would also be curious how you then approached your diversification, because my understanding is that all the startups are looking for investors and the investors are looking for good startups, but there's always an issue of information. How do you match those both? And so I would be curious how startups, like a lot of startups out there, how they're getting the attention of investors. Of course, appearing on Startup Radio, but other channels.
It's also the other way around. I mean, investors are looking for great startups. So I do ask the question myself as well. How do I get in touch with good startups? What I've learned is in the past few years that from a startup perspective, I mean, if you do your initial pitch deck right, as boring as it sounds, this is an important first step, because really I do see so many pitch decks a day, and it really comes down to the first impression you make. And it's like scanning the pitch deck for like, and you have just 3, 4, 5 minutes until you say, okay, I want to learn more, or I put it into the bin. And then there's what I like very much is the suggested pitch deck approach by Sequoia Capital. Because that's really boiling it down to the key question an investor has. And so do craft those 10, 12 pages correctly, and then it's already, you're getting very far in providing angel investors a first good set of information to answer their immediate questions.
Of course, we will have them linked down here in the show notes. I was just missing one little piece, because we entered at the point where you are getting the pitch decks. I was curious how you first get the contact of getting the pitch decks, how you find the startups. Is it just your network?
I think it's based on 2 pillars. First one is the network. And I know for a startup, it's difficult to get into a network. But the second pillar here is like the business angel associations, like the business angels here in Frankfurt, Rhein-Main. You can just drop your pitch deck there or fill out a questionnaire, and then you are in the deal flow and will be considered. The info is sent to we call it screening committee, and there's some angels looking at it, screening at it, and if you pass through, you're being asked to join a matching event, which happens every month, a month. And this is like 800 to 1,000 startups are filing their pitch deck a year. And I would say every month we have like 6 of them presenting in person. Well, at the moment it's virtual through video conferencing, and maybe next year it will be in person again. So this is, and for me, an important source of deal flow as well, because we have the pre-screening there, which helps a lot, and this always is then also about co-investing together with other angels, which is necessary, or from my perspective, wise to do. So I would recommend to look out for those angel syndicates which are asking for your pitch deck. And then, I mean, of course, the third option is like contacting someone on LinkedIn. I personally do read those. What I fully ignore is like connection requests, which don't even put in some notice why someone is trying to connect. But if someone sends me a reasonable note why he's contacting me, I will read it. So I think these are the 3 sources of deal flow. Yeah, network, angel syndicate, and then the social network.
Okay, I see. And now you have the pitch deck in front of you. You're just skimming through it. What are the points you are looking for that the founders or the founder thought about up front?
I would like, first of all, I mean, it's about the business idea or the problem they are going to solve. So that's, I want to understand that, and I want to know that it is a reasonable problem. Yeah, I'm not going to invest into a cute, nice idea which will work, but in the end is small. I'm looking for problems which have the opportunity to generate like 100 million euros revenue a year. And the second question then is this a vitamin pill or is it a painkiller? Yeah, or in other words, is it nice to have or is it sorting out a serious problem? Then another question, of course, is the team looking good? I have invested into single founders as well. But normally, of course, it's easier if you can say, look, they already have an established team and they're meeting typical requirements. I mean, a company which doesn't have a CTO is a bad idea. Yeah. So I think these probably are my personal three major points. So what about the team? Is it sorting out a serious problem, and is the addressable market big enough?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I see. Let's say you are then putting out a term sheet, meaning writing down your standard terms under which you or the syndicate would like to invest. What is then the usual reaction of startups? Do they just accept it, or is there like a lot of negotiation going on?
I think there's still a lot of discussion afterwards. Of course, pricing or valuation is one big issue where you can be miles away or never get on terms. But on the other hand, especially for first-time founders, there's some things which are really hard to accept if they read it for the first time. For instance, like the vesting. Oh, I'm getting ill, and I have to give back or a big majority of shares. This is hard to accept, and you have to explain them what the rationale for this. So there's lots of discussions around this. What has helped hugely is the standard term sheet and standard contracts, which at least here in Germany have recently been drafted by the German Startup Association together with the Business Angel Association, because these two groups have sat together and agreed on like standard terms. So we all know that there's some in favor of the startup or in the founder, and there's other aspects in favor of the investors. So this has cut down many discussions recently.
Of course, we'll also link them down here in the show notes, but they are in German only. Let's say, okay, we now get a step further.
I can correct you. They are both in German and English. And I probably would suggest that even if you're from another legal system, have a look at these, because exactly there has been the big discussion between investors and founders and their lawyers, of course, to find a good leveling between the interest of both parties. I can imagine this will have in other jurisdictions as well.
I see. I was mistaken and corrected. Thank you. Now that you guys agreed on funding, what is, because there are like several types of business angels, one that always want to be the backseat driver, one that is completely ignoring the startup and ask once a year, hey guys, how are you doing? Are you somewhere in between those extremes?
I do consider myself as a rather active business angel. So I'm trying to keep in touch with the founders on a regular basis to be there when they need me, like if they want to discuss a certain issue of their business, to challenge them. So chances are high you will see more of me than other angel investors typically.
Which also means you have a limited amount of a limited number of startup slots for you because you're getting involved. What I understand is that a lot of startups are having something like a WhatsApp, a Telegram group where they regularly send out some type of update, some type of what's going on. Do you also have that?
Now, WhatsApp and Telegram, personally, I have not seen as a communications channel, but yes, we have Slack or plain old email or shared docs. Yeah. But I mean, it's always a question also of in which phase a startup is or how experienced the founders are. I mean, some I don't see for like 2 months. We only have quarterly meetings, but others, if there's something going on which or where I can help, then it may need I'm in touch with them several times a week. I mean, particularly when it comes to financing rounds, then there's always lots of involvement of the existing investors, and or. Like typical situations would be when the company grows and approaches the next level and the founders notice, maybe we need to work on our organization or we need some help in staying focused. Yeah. Or how do I structure my HR or how do I structure my development strategy and stuff like that, and that can mean that I go and work with the startup for a number of days. But generally, I'm not an operational person. I'm the coach here, and I'm asking questions from the startup founders. I'm giving advice, but I'm not then executing. That's for them.
Yes, I've noticed that there is like a lot of questions that pop up on a very predictable path for startup founders, especially when the startup is growing and at one point they can run it like a shoebox. In a shoebox mentality, money in, money out. But at one point when you start to have like two digits of employees, like 10, 12, 25, you cannot keep track of what everything is doing. And you need to really take the step and break stuff down and divide it between people, which I personally found pretty hard to do the very first time. Do you also see that?
Yeah. I mean, we have to differentiate between first-time founders and people who have been running a company previously. I mean, and this dominantly applies to the first-time founders. They are getting into situations where they have never been before. And the problem can be that they even don't know that they are in a difficult situation. So that now you've grown to a certain level that you immediately need to implement some processes. I just had that recently, like first-time founder growing above 10 employees or 10 employees in the development department, and then they notice, oh, there's this chaos coming up or it's not working as smooth as it should. So, and there, I always want to be proactive, like challenging my founders, what could be a problem now? Because I know when they reach a certain size, these are typical problems. So I'm challenging them, asking, hey, do you have a problem here? But I'm also trying to establish a relationship with them where they automatically come and talk to me about potential issues and room for optimization. and so that I can give back some of my previous experience.
Yeah, that's also what I found very useful. If you have a business angel who does not only give you money, but also provides additional benefits. I think we got through most of the points we've been talking about, but let me ask you two questions. First, what would be your top recommendation for a first-time founder who just gets his pitch deck together and thinks about approaching business angels? What would be like your first tip, except for get your pitch deck together, look for the Sequoia pitch deck, look at the German Standard Setting Institute website, the financing contracts and stuff like that? What would be like your number one tip there?
I would say be open and try to learn from the advice or the feedback that people are giving to you. I mean, of course, every investor is a bias, so he may tell you some things which are in his favor, but if you speak to more people, you will of course get more feedback. So go out and listen what they are saying, and even in the if you make errors or not really in the first instance, you will surely have a second chance with the next interested investor, and then you can do better.
Yes, I've.
Oh. Don't try to pose that you are the best and most knowledgeable person. Yeah, it's just natural that you don't have as much as experience as someone who has twice the age, for instance, of you.
Yes, that pretty much goes down the alley we've been talking about, for example, Christopher Oster, founder and CEO of Clark that we talked to recently. He said they talked to something like 300 investors in total since they started raising venture capital. They're right now in Series C. And the guys from Penta I talked to, they had to talk to more than 60 investors before they found an investor. So it can quite drag on. One last question I would have for somebody who's out there. Let's say for one reason or another, they have not been a successful entrepreneur, but they do have some money and are thinking about investing as a business angel. What would be your recommendation for them?
I would say go and go to such an angel investment club and don't invest alone as a lonely wolf. So they can give you some help or advice and you can learn from them. This is one thing. You're not alone. I personally, although I have some quite experience now, I would never do an investment alone. I always work in a syndicate. And then the second recommendation is, as I said before, this is high risk. Chances of failure are very high. If you do that once, you need to do it 10 times on the long run. Otherwise, you will just be losing money. So as a type of investment, one startup is not enough, definitely not.
So you should have the capability to invest in more than one startup. Best would be something like 10. And of course, you have to have the money to actually carry the losses because 8 of them are most likely not going to succeed, right?
Yeah. So third advice here is don't invest money which you need. Oh, well, somehow you need it, but just consider it will be sitting there for 7 or 8 years and you have no chance of accessing it. And don't spend that money which you need for your daily life. Or depression if this startup would become bankrupt.
Great. It was such a pleasure having you here. Thank you very much. There were a few interruptions and a few times your resolution jumped where I had to adjust the frame. Really sorry about that. And for a few split seconds, your picture was frozen. Unfortunately, that is something due to the internet we cannot really we cannot really influence, but I do believe the audio and sound quality in 99% of the interview was pretty great. Thank you very much for being a guest, and everybody who'd like to learn more, go down here in the show notes. Of course, we have the pitch deck from Sequoia. Of course, we have the standard financing terms. Of course, we do have a link to several business angel organizations and the German Federal Business Angel Organization, as well as your personal LinkedIn profile, right? Yes.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here with you.
If you are a professional looking at the European startup scene, Germany is a place you cannot miss. Fortunately for you, there is startuprad.eu, the authority on German startups. This English-only podcast brings you fresh interviews each week. Most likely, you have never heard or read anything on these startups before in English, but you will in the future. Be ahead of the curve and subscribe to startuprad.eu podcast. Or check for the startuprad.eu internet radio station. Check your Alexa for the startuprad.eu skill as well.